Richard Smith, welcome again to KBOO.
Thanks, Bill. Happy to be here again.
Richard Smith is a historian of modern China, also an environmental activist, co-founded the organization System Change, Not Climate Change. His books and writings include China's Engine of Environmental Collapse, just out this year. Previously, he wrote Green Capitalism, The God That Failed, and he's written many important articles, all quite accessible. We'll be discussing the changes that must be made in the United States and indeed world protection of all kinds in near every industry, to stop burning fossil fuels and every use to which they're made, to replace that fossil fuel energy with renewable, mostly sun and wind energy, for all needed protection. We need a new transportation system and organic regenerative agriculture, all new buildings, zero carbon and retrofitting the old, also great programs in energy conservation and use reduction, and on and on and on. At least for now, only the most necessary airplane travel. No weekends in Aruba. Needless to say, the powers that be are not listening. Indeed, they can't imagine voluntarily slowing down, and they reject the need to reduce production and greenhouse gases. Even those who don't deny that global warming is a problem, our elites have developed their solution, our elites and companies. It is a green capitalism. Richard Smith, you challenged that in your book, Green Capitalism, The Guide That Failed. Tell us why.
Here's the basic problem. We need to, as the scientists tell us, we need to dramatically and rapidly suppress emissions. But we live in economies that are built on growth. In the United States, in the West, we live in capitalist economies that cannot exist without growth. They must constantly grow to generate new profits, to generate new jobs, and so on and so forth. So we come across this at every point, because to suppress emissions means to suppress production, because emissions are not separable. There are no areas where it's possible to separate CO2 emissions from production, except in one area. There is one area which we can get kind of a freebie here, and that is energy generation, electricity generation. We can replace fossil fuel power plants with solar and wind, and that will get us clean energy, albeit, of course, there are costs involved, environmental costs involved in producing those wind turbines and solar panels and so forth like that. But that's really the only field across the rest of the industrial structure in manufacturing, in mining, in steel production, non-ferrous metals like aluminum, cement, aviation, shipping, transportation, chemicals, vehicle, heavy truck transportation, chemicals, plastics, textiles, electronics. All of these industries, they're what are called the hard-to-abate industries. That is, yes, we can suppress emissions in energy generation, electricity production, and most of the discussion in the U.S., the West, and China and so forth is about substituting solar panels and wind for coal and natural gas or fossil fuel power. And that's good as far as it goes, but that's only coal production, for example. Fossil fuel production of electricity only accounts for a third of China's emissions, even less in the U.S., about 25%. So suppressing those alone will be good. That's a big step, but it's not enough. All of these other industries, the metals, the cement, the shipping, chemicals, the plastics, all these kinds of things, there are no easy solutions for them. The difficulties are immense. And, you know, there are always talks about tech fixes, oh, well, we can have hydrogen produce steel and so forth. And yes, you could do that someday, maybe, but it requires an immense build-out of infrastructure of electrolyzers to produce hydrogen from water rather than from fossil fuel and so forth like that. So there are some possible changes in the way, way distant future, but we need to suppress emissions this decade and next decade. If we don't do it in the next two decades or so, there is no hope for humanity. We're just doomed. I mean, we just cannot keep growing emissions at the rate we're going. Like China's emissions are going at 5% per year. And China's emissions are already double those of the U.S. China accounts for 30% of world CO2 emissions. The U.S. accounts for 15%, the EU 7%, and so on down the line. So the biggest emitters are China and the U.S. They account for nearly half the world's emissions. And the only way, I've argued in my paper, in my book on China's Engine of Environmental Collapse, the only way to suppress those emissions in the near term, right now, is to suppress the emissions. That is, you have to, in these difficult industries, there is no choice but to, as George Monbiot of The Guardian wrote with respect to aviation, there is no tech fix. The growth in aviation and the need to address climate change cannot be reconciled. A 90% cut in emissions requires not only that growth stops, but that most of the planes which are flying today are grounded. I recognize this is not a popular message, but it's hard to see how a different conclusion can be extracted from the available evidence. It's the basic engine of capitalism, the basic growth-driven engine of capitalism that is the problem. The only way to suppress those emissions in the short term is to park the cars, ground the planes, stop producing so much steel, so much aluminum, stop shipping stuff from China and all over the world, stop production of synthetic textiles, which are all based on oil, fossil fuels, stop producing endless new gadgets to consume electricity that require all these chemicals and chips and so on and so forth. None of this anybody wants to hear about. I read about this stuff, but nobody wants to hear about this stuff, because who wants to suppress economic growth? And yet, if we don't, we're just writing our death warrant. Scientists are tired of telling us, look, people, wake up here, you got to do something. But we can't, because we live in this economic system. So the only alternative really is to demand rapid phase outs of the oil industry and the auto industry and many industries. I'm not saying we shouldn't have any cars. Of course, we need some cars, but cars could be designed, you know, like old Volkswagen Beetles, you know, to be endlessly rebuildable and upgradable and so forth. But instead, the model, annual model industry, model year change, which was innovated by GM back in the 1920s as a way to sell more and more cars, instead of building cars to last forever, they're built to last as short a possible time as possible. And they lard the cars with dashboard video displays, which are dangerous at any speed, you know, electric heating of your steering wheel and your seats, and on and on and on, to sell ever more cars and consume ever more resources. This whole structure, this whole set of motivations needs to be cashiered. We just cannot, on a finite planet, we just cannot have an ever-growing economy. That's the U.S. economy. The Chinese economy has different drivers, which I talked about in my book. Profit motivation is not the main thing. But still, the engine of Chinese growth is built on the desire of Xi Jinping and the Communist Party to catch up and overtake the U.S., and they pull out all the stops to do that. So that means building just endless amounts of infrastructure and, you know, satellites to the moon and so forth. You know, this is just crazy. Both of these systems are just crazy. They're suicidal. Just driving us to collapse.
This is Bill Resnick of the Old Mill Variety Hour on cable. We've been discussing what must be done and soon to stop the global warming apocalypse. And you sort of anticipated what we're going to do next week, Richard, which is discuss, in view of that problem and in view of the fact that right now the suppression of all those industries is a non-starter almost in American discussions, except on the left, where we talk about degrowth and defunding.
Even on the left, and it's a non-starter.
It's hard to do, but at least some of the journals are doing it. In the mainstream press, you don't get it at all. We'll talk about that next week. At some point, when climate disasters get a lot worse, when they're more dangerous, frequent, killing hundreds and thousands and millions of people, when parts of New York City and all of New Orleans, except a few little hilltops, are underwater, then people are going to realize how terrible the threat that climate change creates. That could happen in 5 to 10 years, to that moment of awakening. So next week we're going to really be talking about that and what can be done. Richard, I'd like this week to talk a little more about when we, in fact, reach that point, the left will have to have a solution ready and one that could work to convince people that utter austerity might last for a few years, but their life would really improve if we, in fact, then began moving towards a very, very different economic protection system and the way people live. And we have to develop that. So I was hoping today that we could talk about the changes that are needed in industry. And auto is really a wonderful subject to talk about because we are going to need some, as you pointed out, we need some auto industry, but it really has to change very radically within a very different transportation system. You've written quite well on that and eloquently. Give us your ideas of the transportation system, particularly the auto park, which is not the major part in our planning, but it still is extremely important. Give us a sense of the transportation industry and the role of autos and what our auto industrial capacity should actually be devoted to.
Well, so autos are, of course, they've been for decades, they were the second biggest industry after housing in the United States, after construction and housing. So autos were the largest industry, the largest employer, and so on and so forth. But the whole thing is based on repetitive consumption, on designed-in obsolescence, on persuading you to buy the next model car. And so the solution is largely seen by many in the liberal media and also even on the left that, if we just get electric cars, that will solve the whole problem of pollution. Well, that won't solve the whole problem of pollution because as one study I cited in the discussion of autos showed, the amount of pollution resulting from over the life cycle of a gasoline-powered automobile, the amount of pollution that's produced before the vehicle leaves the showroom is more than will ever come out of the tailpipe over the average 7 to 8 year lifespan of the car. And that was, some years ago, this is all gasoline powered cars. And actually, manufacturing electric vehicles is even more polluting than manufacturing gasoline powered vehicles, mostly because of the batteries and so forth. There's a study of this cited in my articles and my book. So the point is, if you replace gasoline power vehicles with electric power vehicles, but you still have the same built-in driver of obsolescence, then you end up simply throwing away perfectly good vehicles and all the pollution that results from that and carrying on the same built-in problem of capitalism. It's true you can reduce the emissions dramatically by switching to electric, but all of the production that goes into making the car, the steel, the aluminum, the lithium, the batteries, and so on and so forth, that goes into making a car, which is ultimately, in America, in the U.S. and the West, a disposable product, like an iPhone. You have an iPhone, and after 2 or 3 years, Apple wants you to lose your phone after a couple of years or trade it in and get a new one. And they deliberately obsolesce the phones. Over time, the apps won't work, and the newer versions of the apps won't work, or the battery life falls down, And it's a deliberate effort to get you to toss away a perfectly good phone. My old iPhone 3, Model 3S, would be a perfectly good phone. There's no reason to throw that thing away. But it could be easily adapted and updated. But they don't want to do that because that ruins their whole business model of producing endless more phones and keeping all those Chinese slave workers making them in Foxconn factories. So that's the same dynamic in the auto industry. If you made cars that could last for a long time, for decades and so forth, that were easily rebuildable and upgradable and completely recyclable and get rid of all the non-essential electronic crap in the cars and made them lightweight, super lightweight, so they don't consume much energy, either electric or gasoline powered, well, that would just put the auto industry out of business, right? And we don't want the auto industry out of business because it employs millions of people. So this is the built-in problem of capitalism. You have to grow the industry. You have to destroy the planet in order to hang on to our jobs today. This is our fate. I mean, this is capitalism. There's no technical solution to climate warming aside from the issue of wind and solar power. That is a sort of a freebie we get. We can do that. That is, we can dramatically separate the growth of that particular industry from emissions. But that's not true for almost every other industry you can think of. So any kind of economy built on perpetual growth just means consuming more resources down the line. And with battery-powered cars, you can see. I have a friend in California who leased a battery-powered Chevy Bolt. Why didn't they buy it? They didn't buy it because it makes no sense to buy an electric car because they change from year to year so fast that in 3 years, the next model Bolt will go 300 miles, whereas theirs only goes 200 miles. So who is going to want to buy a secondhand Bolt 3 years from now that only goes 200 miles on a charge? And what's more, a replacement battery costs a lot of money. You know what a replacement battery for a Tesla 3 costs? It costs $45,000, more than half the price of the car. And if the changes in batteries and technology, propulsion and so forth continue at their current pace, then each new vehicle will be obsolesced just as fast, if not faster, than the preceding one. So, in 3 or 4 years, 5 years, you'll have cars that will go 500 miles on a charge.
and they'll charge in half an hour or 20 minutes or something like that. Well, then who is going to want to buy an old one? So you'll see rapid depreciation of value and destruction of vehicles. It just like, they would become like iPhones.
Yeah. This is Bill Resnick, the Old Mobile Variety Hour on cable, talking to Richard Smith. His specialty is modern China and its economy. We've been discussing how electric cars are not the solution unless they were built to last long, long periods, and the companies are not interested in them. In fact, there should be less of them and much more mass transit. We haven't gotten back to that. But there's one last issue, Richard. Some people might accuse you of being a really hard-hearted guy, wanting to suppress all those industries, putting so many people in auto and the airlines and making clothing and the fossil fuel industry, putting them out of work and desperate for their families. Do you have a defense to that charge?
In everything I write, Bill, I immediately discuss the issue of jobs creation. That is, I've called for the oil industry to be phased out and the coal industry to be virtually shut down, nearly shut down. You do need coal for a few technical processes and so forth, so you need a little bit, but not much. But I've called for the phase out of the auto industry as it exists, as a designed-in obsolescence production machine, but a downsizing of the auto industry, massive downsizing. But whenever I've called for these, I have always joined that call with a demand that the government provide WPA or equivalent new jobs for all these displaced workers at the same pay and benefits they're getting right now. That was actually in the small print of Bernie Sanders' plan, but he never really made much of a point of it, which was too bad because most people counterpose environmentalism to kind of jobs in the economy because they understand intuitively that if we're going to suppress emissions, we have to quit making so much stuff, quit converting so much of nature to product, and that means fewer jobs. Well, unless you couple that necessity, we do need to do that. We do need to suppress industries in order to save humanity. But you have to couple that with job creation program, a job generation program, to guarantee every single one of those workers new jobs at comparable pay and benefits. That is absolutely, that has to be the starting point. I've said that in every book I've written about China, about the U.S., everywhere. And that has to be the case. That's one of the really dumb things about organizations like 350 and so forth like that. They just go on and on about the need to suppress emissions, and they never, ever talk about jobs. Well, you're never, ever going to get any workers to support that mission if you don't guarantee them a just transition and new jobs. Not just a vague promise somehow in the future, but actually job guarantees. That has to be fundamental. It has to be the first step.
Yeah, I think I disagree with you a little. 350.org does, in fact, mention that a good deal, but you're absolutely right. It's disappointing that their major, major, major programs are in stopping coal, like the Sierra Club. But they're all moving towards recognizing that jobs, it's slow and it's not sufficient, and they really should have to change their entire rhetoric and move from just stopping fossil fuels to rebuilding our whole economy, suppressing so many industries, rebuilding our economy, which will create jobs for all.
But they can't. They can't say that because these NGOs like 350.org are supported by the Rockefeller Foundation. You think the Rockefeller Foundation wants to suppress any industry? Please.
I think that there are some capitalists who ultimately decided to go with Roosevelt because they knew in the 30s, they knew if they didn't, they would be destroyed completely. And they thought that they could maintain, then regain control and set up their system where they're in control and maintaining their riches and the honor that they bestow upon themselves. Yeah, I think that the NGOs, some of them are smart enough to recognize and they will all recognize in 5 to 10 years that the world is going to have to change. And they want to be in charge of that change. Anyway, that's what we're going to talk about next week, Richard. I think I've stolen the last word for you, but we can discuss all of those issues. This was Bill Resnick for the Old Mobile Hour on cable radio talking to Richard Smith. He's a writer of books and articles, an activist, a really soft-hearted environmentalist doing his best with comrades to save the planet, create millions of good jobs, and in the process generate the sort of movements that ultimately lead the way to a society that's radically democratic, that produces sustainably, a society in which all humans have the time, the means, the motivation to live in ways that are creative and fulfilling. This was part one of our interview. Looking forward to a discussion on what we do in the current period to make sure that when push comes to shove, a left can prevail rather than the NGOs and the capitalists who will try to recreate their system of power and control if they're able to maintain direction of the world economy. Richard, thanks a lot for talking to us.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me, Billy. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
So long.